170 this is? Yeah. Yes. All right, here it is. It begins.
Which means Nemiroff just launched the most massive attack in the history of chemical warfare.
Let's talk response.
The worst thing we could do is nothing.
I agree. If you let him get away with chemical weapons, what's next? Biological? Nuclear?
Welcome to the CIA, sport. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 107D170. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian, you're no Harrison Ford Dunaway.
No, that's kind of true there, Scott Johnson.
All right, so anyway. Honey, you're not going to believe this.
I think Ben Affleck just carjacked me. What the hell? First a nuclear bomb, now this. Hold on. Wait a minute. WTF, I can see him from here. He just wrecked my car. Worst day ever. No, wait. He just jumped out of my car. Oh, great. Oh, now it's exploding.
He drives like
now it's exploding. Thanks a lot, Reindeer Games.
Texting. It's the very first time I've ever seen a PSA for texting and driving.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Right? Not bad. Also with us, Randy, check out that high-tech Windows CE Cassiopeia PDA, Jordan.
Aloha, Brian Scott. Brian. This week, we follow along very closely as an Israeli jet loaded with a single atomic bomb bobs along over the desert to the sound of beautiful opera music, and then, like the rest of the film, gets distracted and face plants hard. And like the rest of the film, we get radiation poisoning. Sorry about that, guys.
No problem. It's all right. I'll take it. Finally, Brian, I'd much rather be stuffing animal crackers in Liv Tyler's belly hole Ibbot.
I was waiting for that in the picnic scene. So pretty clever to put the bomb into a cigarette machine. But if they would have used a pop machine, they could have put the plutonium in a Mountain Dew cans, and they wouldn't have had to change the color, the consistency. And if somebody would have inadvertently purchased one, nobody still would have noticed.
Nice.
Cigarette machine in 2002? What were they doing at the stadium? They just wanted to be... No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Also,
these very popular in Russia. I don't know why America doesn't have cigarette machine everywhere.
Distinct lack of cell phones and stuff yet, even though I think they were starting to proliferate a little better in 02. You know?
Yep.
It's a pretty... didn't we have... we had, like, razors then? Pink razors? Wasn't that a thing? That was a deal. I'm not just remembering that wrong, or it seems like that was right around then. So it's all buzzers and beepers and
a lot of beepers
and big CRT monitors and stuff like that.
Was this supposed to take place in current day Baltimore or current day universe?
In the book, it's 1991, and it just happens that Tom Clancy was writing the book about the Soviet Union, and right after he released it, boom, no more Soviet Union.
But they didn't
follow the book any other place. Why would they do it with the beepers?
It's a good point. They didn't. They changed everything. Like, the main bad guys were never German. They were all Middle Eastern. Mm-hmm. Now, it's actually Al-Qaeda, named as Al-Qaeda. And then there was a lot of accusation thrown toward the director that you guys watered this down not to offend the Middle East. And some people were pissed about that. And they claim that all that stuff was decided upon before the attacks of 9/11, which in theory was the thing that scared them into changing it. So a lot of controversy, not the least of which is Ben Affleck as freaking Ryan or Jack Ryan, which weirded everybody out at the time. I think it'd work a little better now. You know, his ranking has risen since then. I think people would take it a little more serious.
And nowadays you can kind of see this as a prequel. At the time, you're like, oh, the next Jack Ryan film. And actually, the book is kind of like, no. This is Jack Ryan back before he was, more like Jason Bourne.
It's also difficult to tell if they retcon that the story to fit the idea of it being a prequel rather than older Jack Ryan. He had just barely met Gates McFadden slash and what's her name slash whoever all played the wife later in the other movies. Did you guys forget? I forgot Gates McFadden, a.k.a. Star Trek's Dr. Crusher, was the wife in Hunt for Red October. I had no idea.
In the Ben Affleck one? Really?
No, the Alec Baldwin.
I'm sorry, the Alec Baldwin one I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird, right?
I did not remember that.
Weird, I think. I think that's
I tried
weird.
To ignore that movie.
Come on now. You don't not a fan? You don't like the
Well, I'm not a huge fan of the whole series. My God, don't send me your hate mail. I'm sorry.
See,
all
actually,
died.
I think that was the one I really enjoyed was Hunt for Red October, and not so much Patriot Games and Clear Skies.
It was Patriot
Danger.
Games that, Patriot Games was probably my least favorite of those. I've seen them all. I've seen all of them, but you know,
Patriot Games had things you want. It had Harrison Ford, who you want at the time, and it had Sean Bean, who you want. You know, you want your Sean Bean.
And Patriot Games.
And Patriot Games was not very good. I mean, it was okay. I have some fond memories of it sort of being a kind of thriller and being okay with it at the time, but I don't think those things are that great now if you go back. You know, I prefer my Harris, my post Indiana Jones Harrison Ford. I think I prefer him in things like Air Force One. A little over the top. A little more fun, you know, a little less talk, a little more action.
Cowboys versus aliens.
Yeah, which I still haven't seen, but yes, all those things are okay. You know, he looks interesting in the upcoming Ender's Game adaptation, you know, as the whatever
he looks
he is.
Old.
Yeah, he really does. Well, he is old by most standards. He's what, 70 something now, 72, something like that. I mean, he's grandpa age, really. And talks like this now. Dad, that sword belongs in the museum, Dad. Like that.
Hey, Scott, anyway. give us a little pause refresher there, because I'm hearing a little crusty.
Well, you're hearing a little crusty.
It's really still way too.
Hey, is it getting better? Is that better? Is it any better?
You're starting to clear up a
little
bit.
Coming back. Okay, great. Fantastic.
That's a little better.
You all still sound like ass to me.
Right, yeah. Me too.
Why do you all sound good to me? You all sound amazing to me. Hold on, I'm going to pause. Yeah, we're back, everybody. Sorry, a little technical hoo-ha. We got to fix it. Everything's fine now. Don't stress about it. You know what I probably ought to do? I'd probably let Scott Fletcher explain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what he thinks. What does he think?
Yeah, what do you think, Scott Fletcher, of the sum of all fears?
The sum of all fears. Why are three missing Russian nuclear scientists holed up in Ukraine communicating with neo-Nazis? CIA agent Jack Ryan, a man with two first names, played by Ben Affleck, digs up more information than the U.S. government is willing to accept. As bombs kill thousands in Chechnya and in the U.S., Ryan races against time to prevent an all-out war. Based on a novel by Tom Clancy, this high-intensity techno thriller co-stars Morgan Freeman.
He'd been holding out. We didn't know he could do that voice.
Love it.
I had no idea. We'd have made him do more stuff for Deep Impact or whatever the hell else we got.
Deep Impact.
Directed by Phil Aiden Robinson.
Armageddon
Alden, rather.
And Deep Impact have like a crossroads here, don't they?
They do have quite a few. Yeah, there's a few connections like that. This dude, Phil Alden Robinson, you may not think you know him out there listening at home, but you do. Dude made Sneakers, man. One of the coolest best spy movies of all time. I think.
Didn't we review this like on episode?
We haven't done Sneakers yet. I wish we had.
1 million ago, we didn't do it.
It comes up a lot. We talk about it because it's a great, great movie.
Yeah. It feels like we did Hackers.
Hackers, and that Hackers is no Sneakers.
Hackers.
Yeah, it's no Sneakers.
What's the difference?
What's the deal? He also directed Field of Dreams, and then here's the best one, the one that really matters the most, Rhinestone.
He got Stallone to sing.
Yep. Some Trapper John MD TV episodes, Rhinestone, like I said, Field of Dreams, and then goes on from there. Really not much lately. I want to say last thing he directed was, he's got something coming out this year. So Sum of All Fears, the last thing he finished. Angriest Man in Brooklyn is completed and will be coming out this year, whatever that is. So good times.
That's Mila Kunis, Peter Dinklage, Robin Williams vehicle.
Oh, weird.
Because this is the year when Peter Dinklage can do anything he wants.
Yep.
This year
and is doing
his life
and is doing everything. been months.
That's yeah. right. Yes.
Some of it
even change his name.
Right.
Yes.
He could
yes.
do that.
Pedro.
Get out of there.
The name Peter Dinklage really makes you sound like a dwarf. I mean,
Peter Lage. Yeah. Just take off the dink.
Peter Lage.
Peter. Yeah. I'm Peter Lage. Yes.
And his middle name, by the way, I don't know if you know this, Peter Dinklage's middle name is Hayden. His initials are PhD.
PhD, Peter Hayden Dinklage.
That is awesome.
All right, well, good for him. PhD. Good for him and all the money he's getting, I guess, I suppose. What was the point of that, though? Oh, yeah. So this Phil Robinson guy knows how to make some good movies, has, you know, a couple that you could maybe put your nose up at, but...
Hang your hat on?
Yeah. How do we... I mean, okay, so... I've already said I'm not a giant fan of the series, of the Jack Ryan series. I think the books are pretty good, and I read one of those other two. I want to say it was Clear and Present Danger. Right, is the one
they
read.
All run together, really.
They kind of do. And so it got me to thinking about the whole Tom Clancy thing, which was such a big deal in the 90s. Like, his books were just selling like crazy. Yeah. Number one sellers left and right. Their books were being, or games and movies were being made left and right. And I don't know what, I don't know what his value is now. Is he still a thing that people, you know, tremble when a new book is coming and they freak out and they can't wait? Or is all this espionage, Cold War era stuff, is it no longer so relevant that he looks less relevant as a creator of that stuff?
I don't know about the books, but the, you know, all of his games still do fairly
games
well.
No kidding. I mean, all the Rainbow Six and... Splinter Cell and Hawks. Stuff like that. Now, apparently, he is working on. He's writing a new film that's due out. It's in post production right now, called Jack Ryan.
It's gonna star. Saw this. That's right.
Chris Pine as Jack Ryan in the new one.
Yes,
reboot.
And Kevin Costner
as.
I am out.
I was very frustrated because I just read, while I was watching this movie, I just read there have been 4 different actors who played Jack Ryan. I'm like, no, there have been 3 different actors who played Jack Ryan. I do not accept this fact. And then I looked up and I'm like, Chris Pine, no, he's too young to have played Jack Ryan. It's coming out later.
It's directed by Kenneth Branagh. That's crazy. I'll watch this. I'll see this.
I'll totally go see this. This may be the most exciting part of it, I think.
So check out the ladies what have played the character of Carolyn Ryan or Carrie Ryan.
All right.
You got your Keira Knightley's the new one. She'll be the one in the new one.
Kathy.
Well, Carolyn, Kathy is the same.
Yeah, that's right. They do. They flip around.
They switched around. Gates McFadden was number one in Hunt for Red October in 1990. Mm-hmm. If you ever lose your car keys, it was that one. Patriot Games in 92. This was played by Ann Archer and then replayed by Ann Archer again in 94 for Clear and Present Danger. And then 2002, played by Bridget Monaghan, who's a total hottie.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently this movie was called Total Fears in Japan. Why did they change that?
Total Fears.
Because we know about the nuclear bomb.
When you add the sum of all fears, you get the total fears.
Right. Then what do they do in Excel in Japan?
Is that a mathematical operator?
Our version of Excel only has total buttons.
The product of all fears. Yeah. If it was fear times fear.
Got it. _ fear. Anyway, so she's great. And then you got your Keira Knightley. But that's 10 years between... You know, a pretty rapid fire succession back in the day.
Right. They were all within the first three 4 years of each other. And then these last two were almost 10 years apart between Clear and Present Danger, Sum of All Fears and the new business.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear the ultimate spoiler for this whole series?
Yeah. What?
Yes, please.
So there's a bunch of
Jack
these books.
Ryan is a lady.
The bad guys.
There's a bunch of these books. Like Sum of All Fears. There's 9 more Jack Ryan books after that one.
Oh, my. Really? Wow.
In the most recent one, Threat Vector,
right?
President Jack Ryan.
What?
Not kidding.
Threat Vector. You know what? That sounds like, think about it. If that wasn't already a book, what a shark jumping movie title that sounds like.
No kidding.
Yeah.
First of all, Threat Vector is a terrible title.
That's a great title.
You know what? I'd put it on par with Quantum of Solace. As much as I love James Bond.
Right.
Threat Vector's really not that far a jump.
It's actually in the last 3 books. The last 3 are Dead or Alive, where he runs for president, doesn't make it. And then Locked On, where he runs for president and gets there. And then
Locked On.
Threat Vector.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I think so I you like can, the name Threat Vector.
You can see like why Tom Clancy has sold his name to video games, because he's out of ideas.
Well, that's where the big money is, and for him, long term, like even that stuff's had a bit of a dip. People are kind of not thrilled with the way the Rainbow Six games had gone for a while. So those went away for a long time, and now they're kind
of
making a comeback.
All of the Warfare first person shooter games have all kind of come to the same place. Yeah. Like they've all been evolving to a narrow point.
Well, point is who made the most money, and it was Call of Duty. So they've all started wearing Call of Duty clothes, and it's unfortunate because I will say this about early stuff, early Clancy games. They were more about strategy, tactics, sending in a team, giving orders. It wasn't run and gun and blow crap up and you know, pull the left trigger and then aim and shoot. Mm-hmm. They've all gravitated toward the Call of Duty model because the Call of Duty model made ass tons of money. And I think it's unfortunate because they missed out on an opportunity to kind of serve that tactical crowd. But that tactical crowd is not as big as the 15-year-old a-holes on Xbox Live that just want to play, you know, Call of Duty. So I understand, but it's unfortunate because some of that stuff was pretty good. And there's some, and again, this is like this year, there are some attempts to bring some of that back with the new, I think it's a new Rainbow Six game or a new, what's the other one? Rainbow Six and the other one. I can't remember the other one.
So, I'm just saying, I don't think it matters. I don't think you can do anything that's going to make me go, wow, this is new.
You think it's just a tired writing? Yeah, go ahead.
I'd be curious to know how much writing is really involved with those games these days. You know, like what does Clancy provide for the next Rainbow Six
His game?
Just a quick outline, or say, okay, here's what I want. I want them to go in this room, and then I want them to shoot for about 25 minutes, and then I want them to go in this room and shoot for about 25 minutes.
Can he throw a grenade in here? Is that okay? Like that kind of stuff, maybe. But
I think he signs a document stating that his name can be on whatever for the X amount of money, and that's that.
I'm pretty sure somebody else owns his name now. Like like literally, that's true of Ubisoft, or someone owns his name, and he doesn't even get a say anymore. It's just a brand. But I will say this: I completely forgot at E3 they showed off this new massive open world, persistent world thing. Based on his game, or based on his name, but also his sort of tactical shooter gameplay, but in a giant persistent server world, kind of MMO style. What's interesting about it is it's all set like post horrible event, like giant nuke. I don't remember what the deal was, but something terrible has happened and there's no more civilization. And so you're just kind of surviving as units and stuff. And that sounds at least like an attempt to do something interesting. I will throw that at them and say, yes, you are taking modern military shooter in a slightly veered off direction so that we don't feel like you're just rehashing the same thing over and over.
What if we were in a post-nuclear world, just me, you, and Ibit?
Just the four of us?
Yeah, just us and
you,
maybe
you
in
take
an
point.
Abandoned in an abandoned blockbuster.
We eat Randy. We're eating Randy.
Yeah, Randy gets eaten first.
What?
Because you're marinated in sweet
whiskey. I was worried about what was going to watch. Oh my God, you guys are wanting to eat people immediately.
Randy's like a sweet. You're like a sweet risky whiskey.
Just basically
rub.
doing the.
It's because I'm the youngest, right? It's because I'm the youngest. That's I.
That's right,
I
you're still the most flavorful.
Yeah.
I don't agree.
You're the veal of this group.
I wouldn't.
I'll bet you I'm the handiest with a gun.
You might well be. You might well be.
Probably.
That's not going to be any.
Actually, you know what? I'm sure you are because I barely picked one up. But we'd eat you because you're marinated. That's why we'd eat you.
And today I'm marinating in Tomantool, a 16-year Speyside single malt.
Of course. Brian Dunaway would take point because he just looks scrappy like that. and he's tough right now. You like work out and stuff.
Yeah.
But what do we provide to the group? Do we do anything worth doing?
Eating Randy.
I would just like to point out for a moment that I am an Eagle Scout who completed wilderness survival.
Okay.
I just want to point that out.
All right. So maybe I
sit in the back and say, did I ever tell you about the time that I was a sharpshooter for the
I'm just trying to sell myself here. I'm not trying to
No, I'm saying that this is the only thing that I'd be able to contribute in this future post-apocalyptic world is just doing voices of the three people who are still alive.
Right, exactly. You're entertainment. Yeah. Every society needs a fool.
I'm not Hicks. I'm Hudson.
You're Hudson.
Hudson.
Yeah, you complain a lot.
I can feel the comments already going on about our tangents.
Who cares? We like tangents. And besides, you'd be the guy with the cigar up front, Brian, telling Ibbot to stow that shit, Hudson. That's what you'd be doing.
You're writing chicks that your body can't catch.
I feel like it's all prescient to the movie at hand because we haven't really said one way or the other if this is a movie we like or not. And I will say that I liked it a bunch of times, and then a bunch of times I did not like it. Like there are moments where you're like, that's kind of a cool idea. Wow, do that more. And then it would be 12 really pissed off, bleeding, angry old men in a room pretending to be the president and his cabinet.
Please don't take away the observation that you just gave us that you watched the movie like 17 times.
A bunch of times. I really liked it.
I've seen it 1.5 times, this time for the show, and half once on DVD, and I got tired and we did something else, or I can't remember.
This is the only time I've ever seen it, and it's okay. I mean, it's an action thriller where I almost feel like they're trying to bring too many characters into it. I mean, I know I sometimes do the old man thing of like, hey, too many characters and they all look the same and they all sound the same. But my God, in this one, it was a bunch of old white men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them speak Russian for half the time. Some of them don't.
Gosh, this was such a boy movie.
Yeah.
You do not need the girlfriend in this. It feels like they wrote a movie. And they're like, wow. We have 102 men and no women. Can we give Jack Ryan a girlfriend? Oh, sure. He gets married later in his story. So let's give him a girlfriend. All right, what are we going to do with her? We're going to make her oblivious. Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Oblivious girlfriend.
What's something that women complain about? Commitment. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
commitment issues.
Yeah. Put that in. Oh, they're also in distress a lot, right? Yeah, they're in distress.
She puts candles all over the place.
The best scene in the movie is it needs a trope alert.
Oh, whoa. Hold on. I'm right there with you.
If you don't tell a woman what you actually do and then you tell her, she doesn't believe you.
Nope. She
doesn't. Right.
You could seriously say, I sell Caterpillar tractors down at the John Deere store. And she'd be like, hang up.
Like somebody's got to do these things, you know?
World needs ditch diggers too.
Yeah.
Right. Did you guys feel like, did you start getting this feeling that for a while, Ben Affleck, as soon as he would get a script, he would flip through it real quick and look to see if there was any scenes where he'd get to hug up on a girl, or do you think he put it in his contract?
He's looking, flipping through to see if Matt Damon fits in anywhere.
Right. Can I put Matt Damon in this movie too? Come on. But no, it's always like, I felt very Liv Tyler. It's always the same type. This girl looked like Sandra Bullock to me, but what do I know? I mean, she could easily throw a Sandra Bullock in there in that bed scene.
Yep.
But no, I just feel like every time I see Ben Affleck, he's always got to at least do one scene where he's in the bed. And Randy's right. I mean, she purely exists so that Morgan Freeman can give you know, Jack Ryan a hard time.
Yeah, don't get used to getting all comfy with family. And oh, look how much the CIA knows. I know more about her than you do.
And it's such a tired trope. Like a bomb went off. And you need a girl somewhere to worry about. Mm-hmm. Did she make it? Is she all right? I realize that, you know, I say tired trope. The film's been out for a while.
Yeah.
But it just, man, it was such a boy movie. Like,
what would you prefer? Here's a question. What would you prefer? A movie where the women were just better treated in terms of not being the same old trope, that they were smart, independent, contributed more, like we're just less sideline characters, or just World of Dudes style. There are no women in this thing.
I think
it's just
totally
a world of dudes.
Fine. I think it's totally fine to have an all dude movie or a.
Why is that my choice though? Like,
it's a bad choice.
Tom Clancy represents a universe where Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush and Tip O'Neill all stand around and talk. And decide for all the women.
They don't stand around and talk. They walk down a freaking hall and try to. Yeah. That's such a trope. I mean, walking down the hall trying to communicate everything, and then when they get to the ready room, nothing.
Yeah.
Anybody got anything? No, I delivered it all in the hall.
You know, so like, I'm just saying, Tom Clancy sucks here because, I mean, he couldn't even look a few years into the future and imagine Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton, this sort of thing, you know?
Right. Some actual aides. They had to all be 1,000 years old. 1,000 years old and sitting around in that room complaining about how the chair doesn't work and yelling at each other and dripping blood. The president had a cold for half this movie. Like, there was just some some weird, cranky old man business happening that I couldn't get past. Like, that stuff really hurt the movie for me. Everything I felt okay about, kind of, you know, Jack Bauer style 24 bomb going off. Let's hurry up and figure this out stuff. All that stuff's fine. It's tropey, but fine. I couldn't deal with. Couldn't do it.
Really? Yeah. It didn't bother me because, like Randy said earlier, this was supposed to be kind of like a 1991, early 90s kind of, based on that kind of a book. So it didn't really bother me that they were old dudes like that, because they made me laugh. I wasn't laughing with them.
You notice the
laughing at them.
You notice the Russian president guy that took over after the fat one had a heart attack. he's great. He's Julius Caesar in the old HBO Rome series, and he's Mace Radar or yep. Raid. What's his last name? Whatever it is.
President Zorkin.
Yeah. Well, he's in the he's in your Game of Thrones there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's good. I like that guy. He's got a crazy face. Just fun to watch him eat up the screen. But again, it's so oppressive. It's only ever ice and frozen everything here in Russia. And in the building where we're walking around, everything is darkest brown it can be. And it's just shit for miles around. Like, I don't like that trope so much.
Music. Yeah, that depressing Russian music is always like, Russia is the most depressing place in the world for
They got like, really is. Those guys singing and it's just so bad. Yeah. The way we treated the Russians in movies is not an offense against man. It's just stupid. Like,
can you even name a movie where Russia is presented colorfully?
Sure.
Dr. Zhivago. Nope, that's dark.
That stupid comedian, Russia.
Moscow on the Hudson? Oh, no.
Yakov
Smirnoff?
Yeah. He had a movie. Remember that?
Yeah, that's not, I don't think, what he means. How about, like, no, there are. I can't think of any, but I know there are.
Red Dawn, because they were just so happy.
No, they were Cubans in that one anyway. Well, they were Russian. They were under Russian orders, but it was a bunch of Cubans.
I can't place it. Like, one of my favorite Russia movies, or I'm sorry, Russia as viewed by the Western world movies, is The Saint, Val Kilmer.
Oh, yeah.
And Russia is literally dying. Like, everyone is starving and cold. Mm. And the whole point of the film is that they're out of oil.
What about Moscow on the Hudson?
mostly takes place in New York. I don't think you. Yeah. I don't even know if you're in.
How about From Russia with Love? How's that one?
Again, though,
a lot of hot women there, but I can't.
Once again, a little depressing.
All right, how about hold on? How about the one with the they made a cartoon about it? It was animated. It was about the during the czar period, or not the czar, whatever, the pre-communism Russia, where it's a lot of dancing and crazy outfits. I can't think of what it is. it's the Cat People versus Mark Hamill again this week. I can't think of what that is. But there's stuff like that.
I just looked up happy Russian movie. There's no such thing.
It doesn't even return results.
Is available. Yeah.
Google's like, did you mean dark and sad Russian movie?
I've got happy Russian dash cam was the one that came up for me. So I don't think there's going to be much in here.
Yeah. Actually, The Daily Show has painted the best picture of Russia, the happiest picture of Russia in the last 5 years with that dash cam segment.
That makes me a little sad. Well, anyway, director Phil Alden Robinson changed the villains from Islamic extremists that were in the novel to neo-Nazis. And by the way, I'm cool with the trope of secret German Nazis coming up to try to take everything back and be all Hitler again. I think that's a fun trope. Like, I have a good time with it. I don't think it was that well done here, but I like it. So I'm not crapping on that necessarily. It's an interesting idea. This was done prior to 9/11, they say. The director says he did not believe Arab terrorists would plausibly accomplish all that was necessary for the plot of this film to work. After 9/11, the production staff had to review how to present the movie to the public, so they kind of had that whole PR nightmare. But it's weird, because had this happened post-production, or excuse me, had the attacks happened pre-production,
right,
they would have gone, oh, they're capable of not only this, but something way weirder and harder and terrible. And so we probably could keep these guys in here. But it sounds like, if you believe all of this, director, screenwriters, and everybody else were trying to make what they thought was a more plausible film, that would be more realistic, that some weird underground German Nazi guy with a swastika on his watch so nobody can see it would come and, you know, would come and do this, which is kind of interesting.
This is a complicated movie.
It wants to be. Is. Sure wants to be.
It's got this whole thing with the terrorist group having three different ways that they win, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Like,
right.
If they get into World War III, then they win. And if they don't, then they've still bombed Baltimore.
Yep.
And if they manage to pull it off, they've set up a false flag operation. And we all think that Iran did it. And it's like, man, I don't need all that. Like, yeah. You just bomb the Super Bowl. Let's just get some guns firing here.
I love how they avoided showing us what teams were playing. That was fantastic.
Well, no, it wasn't. They avoided it. It was the Gators versus the Rockets.
Yeah. It was
showed that? I didn't see that.
Yeah, there was a guy whose hat said the Rockets, you know, his homemade
what?
Hat.
And then when they showed the team, DC Comics.
Yeah, it really
right.
was.
It was.
Oh, it's DC what it Comics. Is. It's like Tecmo Bowl era football games. When you don't have the NFL money to spend on the license, you have to come up with a bunch of fake names. Right. Which now right. I think I like it better now. I like this movie a whole lot better now that you just told me that. I had no idea. It was the Gators versus the Rockets. The NFL Rockets finally
Rockets.
In the Super Bowl after all these years of trying to get
it's good
their
to
ring.
See Kalamazoo, Michigan finally get their own team.
Was this XFL? Remember when Jim McMahon or who was it that
it
had the
It did kind
XFL.
Of look XFL-y.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But they said specifically that it was the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Right. They made
so they're referencing the NFL, but then making up teams.
Did they have the Ravens in 2002? I don't remember the Baltimore Ravens being a team.
So where are the Gators and the Rockets from cities that don't already have NFL teams?
Well, yeah. One of them would have. Oh, I guess no, not if it's Baltimore. If it's Super Bowl, then they could be from anywhere. I was going to say neither one of them was the home team.
I'd like the Gators to be from Lafayette.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that would make sense.
Can we be the Salt Lake City Rockets? We never had an NFL team.
The Salt Lake City Rockets.
Yeah, the SLC Rockets.
They moved there from Houston or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. But we changed the S to 2 Z's like we do every damn sports thing. The guy,
I miss the XFL because it started off so freaking awesome.
Yeah,
with that guy, with the you could write anything you want on the back of your jersey, and that guy wrote "He hate me" for no explanation available. Like
he moved went on to the NFL with the Panthers. Yeah, everybody called him that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's an awesome thing we had there for just 5 minutes, and I wish it would have hung around. I really do. It was to me. It was like the natural progression of what football already is to me in a way, and it's this weird cyber sport. That's like a future game. It's not ancient cricket where they're whacking things around with weird flat bats and it's slow and it takes 4 days to play it. No, it's like guys in crazy high-tech armor and incredible like weird turf with written stuff on it and CGI intros. And just to me, football needed to go more in the direction of this is a full-on weird like arena football sport and get closer to future sport, if you will.
Oh, yes, please.
Then go back the other way. So I'm sad that didn't work out.
I think the world is ready for a new sport. You know?
Let's do it.
Yeah, maybe it needs to be just less exactly like the previous sport. Like
the
problem with
Instead
the XFL was like this is like the NFL. It's got an X in it.
Just watch football.
Yeah, because it was all the 90s and stuff. But I would really like it if they would bring something like what could can we even let's talk about this.
Okay.
Can modern society
can
modern society even do that now? Can we come up with a brand new sport? I don't know if we can.
None of the sports that we currently enjoy were like invented entirely from the new. I mean, they're all derivatives of other stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
that's true.
We
so
haven't.
I guess that's my point. So let's say it's even derivative. Let's say somebody figures out a way to combine synchronized swimming and
basketball.
Sure.
right. They have that in the Olympics. You didn't see it?
No. Is that coming up? Okay, good.
And yeah.
I mean, I know like that what's the French thing? Lacrosse is bigger and bigger every year and people get into that here especially. It's huge with like youth groups and stuff. They have tons of these lacrosse teams. I mean, that I don't know if that ever has a chance of getting as big as it wants to be or if hockey will ever finally reach its goal, but the idea of one that is like whole new set of rules, whole new set of players, a whole new dynamic, like all of that. I don't see that ever happening again until we reset ourselves. Well, we need to bomb ourselves back to some point and then do it again.
It just needs to be something, take something that's existing and super technologize it. But that's the thing. Right. Well, people say, oh, this was better back when. I remember the freak out that, you know, when hockey, when they added the NHL added the little glowing trails for the puck so you could follow it on smaller TVs.
Right. People lost their crap over that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Which reminds me.
What about basketball? You guys remember?
Basketball.
Trey Parker, Matt Stone.
Or Blurn's ball on Futurama. That was pretty good.
Right. There is something called Bossa Ball, which is trampolines and involves, it's invented in Spain and involves trampolines and some volleyball.
I'm in.
Oh, so, totally!
Yeah. I played
2004, as recent as 2004.
That little hint that people could crash into each other on a couple trampolines. Mm-hmm. You know, that little element of danger that we women, need in our sports.
Right. Women in bikinis and trampolines and nets. That's
I would just like that. To say, this it may just be me, but I have a feeling Scott Johnson will go with me here.
Okay,
the next huge sport that will sweep mankind. It needs to involve Roman candles somehow. Somehow.
Can it also involve these trampolines they're talking about? Because if so, I'm in. All right. Write that down. Let's make it happen.
By the way, folks, if you're at the Super Bowl and the president's there, okay, first of all, if the president's there, go home and watch it on TV. Yeah. But if the president's there and suddenly he's being very obviously shuffled out of the stadium and thrown into a car that goes screeching out of the parking lot, I think you want to leave too.
You don't want to stand there and just blank stare at while he's wonder what's going on over.
That scene is the most pivotal part of this movie, and it's the height of everything we've talked about in this movie, what it's going to apex at. And I felt, even though it came really fast and everything happened really quick, they wanted you to feel like this emotion for the people that were in the stadium. And so they kind of like have Morgan Freeman look around and like, oh, there's that little girl there, that dude there, couple over there is happy. Mm-hmm. They're all going to die. Yeah. And then you realize you can't outrun a nuclear bomb.
Nope.
How are you going to drive out of there?
Well, it's more of a dirty bomb, right? Like that wasn't a full scale.
Right. And that's the thing. They did a trope that I absolutely hate. Give me a trope alert. Which is you've outlived your usefulness, Mr. Scientist trope. Because that bomb wasn't finished.
Yeah.
If they'd finished the bomb.
It was still a cigarette machine.
Yeah. If they'd finished the bomb, it would have yielded a lot greater explosion.
It was just slowly giving people cancer and emphysema and stuff.
Right. Right.
It wasn't.
This will take years.
Okay, one big disappointment.
Don't you hate that? It's in every James Bond film. Whenever you hire someone to build something, as soon as they're mostly done, I can take it from here. Blam!
Yeah, and they kill the guy. Mm-hmm. And also, the same guys that monologue too much when they talk to the good guys, real quick to kill the scientists they're done with. No need to explain anything.
Always kill their scientists. Yeah. Russians always do that.
I mean, hurry up before Sabretooth gets here, so I'll just kill all six of you and leave.
Yeah. If you're going to be a scientist for bad guys, learn to use your own gun and carry it and have it at the ready.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point.
You will need it as soon as you try to get out.
Here's the most depressing part of this film for me. The screenwriter also wrote one of my favorite all-time movies ever. It's in my top 10. I absolutely am in love with the movie Quiz Show. I think Quiz Show is an amazing piece of work. It's the same screenwriter. I don't feel like I'm looking at the same caliber of story writing at all.
Oh, it's he's also the same guy who did a lot of writing for House, the TV show House.
Oh, the show. Oh, well, that's a good show. See? Yeah. What's going on? What was Clancy was walking around going, bar, 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 wouldn't let anybody do anything. I picture him as like that Russian president. That's how I picture him.
I didn't think this was written that poorly. I thought it was executed fairly well.
It's a really good script. It just like, what do you do with all of this? It's like when you pile it all on itself, it becomes this mess.
So it's not that he's.
It should have been simplified. It definitely should have been simplified. Pare out a few things, and tightly close up all these disparate storylines and just make it more America-friendly.
Yeah, too much stuff at once, maybe.
American moviegoer-friendly.
Yeah, right. And for those who gave me a hard time about my Toy Story 3 and called me, you know, cold-hearted, I want to let you know I cried when Morgan Freeman died.
Shut up! Oh, really? You did not. You're such a liar. You didn't. Cry.
I did. It's true though, man. I'm telling you, man. It
every time he dies, Morgan, you're saying
you kill a puppy or Morgan Freeman in your movie, and I am touched.
Man, that's great.
I'm not going to lie. I laughed when the Russian president was saying, I'm fine, I'm healthy, and all of a sudden he makes that face and he falls down. That made me laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Make sure you portray me as vigorous and
vigorous as a conk.
And it was a great fall move. Just like, right. Oh my gosh, that was
dead
totally
right. Hit the ground.
That was great. Also, one of my favorite things, speaking of Morgan Freeman, he plays a ranking member of James Cromwell's presidential administration in Deep Impact. The roles are precisely reversed. Same two actors. Same positions flipped. Huh. That's crazy.
That's a great panel too. Like a great his advisory board.
Oh, the actors are awesome.
Bruce McGill. You got Alias Man. Right.
Mm-hmm. He goes by. He likes to be called Alias Man.
This film is just overflowing with amazing character actors. Mm-hmm. The president of the Russian Federation is Kiernan Hines.
Yeah.
Irish actor, amazing presence. Just like he has a stare that just makes you want to duck.
Yeah.
And
that's the guy who plays Mansraider on Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, one of my favorite character actors of all time, Liev Schreiber, is in this film.
He's
awesome. As a CIA operative. And awesome. he's just like operative number six. Like he's just this guy who just is a tool of everybody else in the film. Mm-hmm. And how they – I don't understand why they cast him there. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, he should have been Jack Ryan as far as I'm concerned. And but, like, he's
best
such a better –
Best thing in the movie.
Yeah, yep. He's the best thing in the film. And there's a scene where you finally get to realize that he's just a tool because Jack Ryan and Morgan Freeman, the Secretary of Defense, are coming back from Russia on a plane, and they land in just torrential rainstorm. And Morgan Freeman walks across the tarmac to meet Liev Schreiber, and he's holding an umbrella, and they talk for a minute, and he gives him some orders and walks away. And Liev Schreiber's standing there. The umbrella has left.
Yeah.
The rain is pouring down on him, and he looks like a cat in a bath.
Yeah, a wet cat.
And,
yep.
And he just has this, like, he has 2 seconds to act and just look miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, give this guy an award. Wow.
He looks like a giant chipmunk now, though. Have you seen him lately?
No.
Yeah, really does.
Yeah, I saw him in the movie 43. I didn't think he was that bad.
No, he's in
Just check him out.
He's in that Ray Donovan, that current Ray Donovan thing, and he's fantastic.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. He just exudes cool. You know, I mean
I like him. He's the best thing about that.
He's a film sack favorite.
Who is
we love him.
What was that Angelina Jolie movie where she was like a spy? Salt. He was great. He was great in that.
He was great in Salt.
If I could throw a switch change my voice to do voice acting, I would want Liev Schreiber's voice.
Yeah.
And I would pretty much watch him in anything.
He's a badass. All right. So here's this other guy, though, that you'll know. You recognize.
Well, I'm glad you're here so we can get this all straightened out. Would you like a cup of tea?
You got any coffee?
Coffee?
Yeah, coffee.
No, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, you don't drink coffee? How about instant coffee?
No, I don't have.
You don't have any instant coffee?
Well, I don't normally.
Who doesn't have instant coffee?
I don't.
You buy a jar of Folgers crystals, you put it in a cupboard, you forget about it. And later on when you.
Now, here's the problem. That guy's great.
Love him.
But I can't. I only can hear that when I see him do other things.
Right.
And this whole time he's like, we got to get the president of the sun. I'm like, oh, geez.
Philip Baker Hall.
Yeah, he's great. He's amazing. A great actor, but typecast himself on Seinfeld. It just kills me.
Magnolia is the film for me because he's game show host.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And who's banging the young chick or something.
But he's in a bunch of weird indie movies too. Just weird stuff, kind of all over the place. Mainstream, indie, like well thought of. Like he's a cool guy, but that's who I can't not think of that guy.
You can't not hear the. Was that the officer that busted Kramer for the library books?
Yeah,
was that his?
That's the one.
Okay.
That's he goes, listen, mister, I don't know who you are, what library you've been to, but he's acting like the most hardened like cop.
Right.
He's just a library card.
And and Paul Thomas Anderson gave him his biggest role at the time, which was in Hard Eight.
Yeah.
And then he continued to become Paul Thomas Anderson's go-to older character actor. He's in Boogie Nights. He's in Magnolia.
I don't think he's actually aging. I think he looks exactly the same through all of that. Hasn't changed that one bit. Speaking of aging, one of Ben Affleck's predecessors to this role as Jack Ryan was Alec Baldwin, as we all know, in Hunt for Red October. In Pearl Harbor, Michael Bay joint, Baldwin, who's in the movie, tells Affleck, who's in the movie, quote, "You remind me of me some 20 years ago.
Oh, now I get it.
Wow.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wah, wah.
There's that.
Hey, can we talk about the chick in the bucket?
Of course. I need a thing for that, though. How about?
Kneel before Zod!
There you go. What's the chick in the bucket?
Ben Affleck's back problem? Did we... I mean, was that something he just told his girlfriend, or was he really the historian over there watching that film footage? I mean,
yeah.
She said he had a back problem, but he didn't seem to exude any back problem to me.
I would have had one after my very lucky helicopter crash where no one else lived but me. I think that would have given me a bad back.
Right.
Is that something you tell your girlfriend so you don't have to do anything?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I get a bad back problem.
Should try that. Okay, here's a trope for you. Russia is the. Oh, I already wrote that. We already talked about that. How about this one? Nervous desktop job guy. Mm-hmm. What did I mean? Desktop? Mm-hmm. Desktop job guy is thrown into some hairy spy business. This idea that you start from
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I'm just an accountant here. And then
you're going to come in with Jack the president. Ryan.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about Jack Ryan, and Liev Schreiber is like, take a gun, point it at his head, pull the trigger when I tell you. Yeah. He's like, no, I don't do that. I'm a freaking analyst.
This fish out of water thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that trope, man, that is the beginning of every badass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. At some point, he hasn't held a gun yet, and he's not ready to.
I get a trope that we've actually seen before in other movies.
What's that?
The heated introduction to all the characters turns out to be acting, or in this case, a fire drill.
Yeah, right.
It's the Kobayashi Maru. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's walk down the hall really fast and talk really fast. Something's really urgent.
I'm glad you said that. That's a good one. And it's also that part of the trope is not that you're just doing this thing, but it's a shadow of things to come. Right. Where it's not going to be all goofy and you're not going to laugh at the end and talk about how hungry you are. You're actually going to be thrust in the exact no way out scenario that you're trying to avoid. And then all the poop hits the fan and the president has a cold and everyone yells at each other.
And nobody ever breaks character during the opening where they're all acting like this is the real thing. We're all acting. This is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What are we supposed to do here?
Right. No one ever. Yes. It's the Kobayashi Maru before Kirk comes out and tells everyone to stand down. Lady from Cheers, you blew it or whatever.
All right, loved it.
Can I have a triple alert?
Of course you can.
My favorite thing in the whole movie is the heroic blue screen of death, man. Mm. Jack Ryan has basically broken into the Pentagon in order to talk to the president on Air Force One or someone, anyone, and convince them to not go into World War III. He's reached the end of his rope. He's made all these steps to get into a place where he can do what he's got to do, and he's finally being denied by somebody, and he just starts raging. Mm. Like, do you have kids? Do you have a family? Do you have an extended family? Mm. Do you have friends? Have you ever known anybody? Have you ever spoken to anyone? Mm. They're going to die. Yeah. He
goes to Ben Affleck, right?
Yep. Yeah, heroic blue screen of death makes me so freaking happy.
Yeah.
Every time it's in a movie where somebody, like, they just have to lose their mind in order to win.
Well, it's their last ditch thing, and it kind of totally works at the last second here. Also, all the lead up between this kind of one-upsmanship that the Russians and Americans are doing seemed like kids in a playground throwing rocks over a hill. It felt to me like totally not the way it would go on both sides. There would be cooler heads throughout. You don't just escalate this quickly over some things where there really is some doubt as to the source of things. Like, none of that stuff rang true to me, but I'll tell you what I really liked. And maybe it's even tropey, but the last 15 minutes or so where poo's really hitting the fan. And it got sewn up a little too quick, but after the sewing up, I love the idea that there's this majestic pan of President Zippy and President Slappy up there with their pens in hand and their big treaties, and it's right. And while it's happening, Liev Schreiber is offing a dude like a little quick montage,
the little cutaways. Yep. Those were great.
Guy's car explodes. Why? Not because there was a bomb in the ignition. Not because there was a bomb when you push the cigarette lighter in. But it goes off when the cigarette lighter pops out.
Yes.
All of that stuff is some of my favorite tropey crap in movies, and I loved that whole, like, when it's the contrast, right? Like, We are signing away peace, but the dirty business is happening behind the scenes, and none shall speak of it. Like, this is
and,
great.
Liev Schreiber's character is named John Clark, and you get to actually see him cut a guy's head off. Like
that guy from that second Riddick movie. I always forget his name, but that guy. Yeah.
Oh, new Riddick movie coming too. Did you guys see that?
Colm Feore isn't his name? I think it's Colm Feore.
Colm Feore Olsen.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Yes,
that guy's great. Yeah, I did. Brian, I went and saw. So I saw The Heat over the weekend.
Yeah, that's with Sandra Bullock, right?
Quite liked that, actually. It was like the best buddy cop movie I've seen in about 15 years. I was surprised how much I liked it.
You said that on Twitter.
And I really believe it. I believe it. I mean,
I was really, really glad
better
to hear
48
that.
48 hours?
Yeah. I don't know about better, but it's like a return to that stuff, like without feeling like, oh, look, we're knowingly being all 80s with our cop movie. It wasn't like that. It just felt like one of those things, and nobody's been very good at those for a long time.
I was worried it looked like Miss Congeniality 3.
That's what I was worried about. It's not like that. It's very funny. It's probably because of the acting and the performances. The direction's really good. Don't take your kids, but it's real. It's really good. And it's funny because there was a big Affleck trailer before that movie came out, so it's kind of weird. Anyway,
you know, every time I look at the technology in movies that were around 1998 to 2002 or so, I always get a little bit nostalgic, and I tried to jump online and get myself a Netscape email address and send you guys a message, but I could not secure one. That's how Ben Affleck in the movie got his information.
Yeah,
was from somebody on Netscape.
That sounds about right. Why is I telling you about the movie theater though?
Phone with a stylus.
I know why.
Talking about Riddick.
No, I know why, because I saw that Riddick poster. That was what it was.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So I just want to.
It was a long road from here to there to tell you about the poster.
I just want
to
say one thing about The Heat. There are a handful of people that I would call the best comedic actors working today. Melissa McCarthy is top five.
She's really funny. I think she's running the risk. She's running a risk though,
absolutely,
of doing the exact same thing everything she does. And I'm not saying that that's bad in the short run. Probably is really good in the short run because you make a crap ton of money and make a bunch of movies. But as long as she's given a chance to do things other than the same thing every time, I think she'll be okay.
Okay.
And she's fantastic in this movie, by the way. She's really good.
But you're talking about wanting something that it comes to very, very few comedians. Like Robin Williams gets to go do drama and get an Oscar. Like people like, let's just say Will Arnett. They just play the same character in everything, and they're funny. Mm-hmm. And Melissa McCarthy does that.
I guess
Ed Helms. Ed Helms is another good example.
I guess so. I guess what I'm saying, though, is the style of it is so like all up in your business that I just think it runs the risk of.
And it can also be bad. Like Identity Thief wasn't a good movie.
No, it was not that great. It was okay. But I'm with you. But it felt like the same act. It felt like the same action. I was actually a little bit worried about going to see The Heat because I was thinking, I'm just going to get more of the same.
Really surprised me. I don't know what the guy was dipping into some serious like old school buddy cop vibe going on here.
I like to see her do like a gender change of Uncle Buck. Like this.
Oh yeah, totally. I can see that.
Okay. Yeah. Take the John Candy role.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She's pretty damn physical. That's one thing.
Right.
The Heat was written by the woman who writes Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
And she seems to be really.
And the director did that Bridesmaids business, so they know stuff. Yeah. It's got Bill Burr in it, so that made me happy because I really like Bill Burr. It's a cool movie. And it's another one of these movies. It's a graveyard for either recent or even not so recent cast offs from either SNL or Mad TV. They all show up in these things.
Kristen Wiig have a cameo in The Heat?
She did not, but dude that used to play Stewart on. Don't touch me. That. Let me do it. That guy.
Did Will Sasso show up?
No Will Sasso.
He just named people.
I'm still trying to figure out the
story. They were all big whenever Matt TV.
Sasso's
they were
awesome.
Both they were both doing some big stuff.
Sasso still is. He's got plenty going on. But it's I can't. I'm trying to think of the other guys. But there was like dudes from not Sudeikis. Anyway, ex people you know.
Bill Hader.
No Bill Hader. Think of any names.
People you know.
Great list.
I'm just making people.
People you know. If you looked it up, you'd see
Bill Hartman.
One of the guys from The Office. That guy Josh or whatever from The Office was all into Aaron in the final seasons. It was like a new character sort of. That guy had a really funny, very short part in the movie. And I can't think of anyone else. But there's a bunch of people. Just go. Yeah. It's worth seeing. It's good. I liked it.
Don't you wish that Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy could have shown up in The Sum of All Fears?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Well, I do too.
You know how I feel.
Good way to bring it back.
I do. Like this movie, it just, man, it's too much old men arguing on a plane.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a great name for their sequel.
What was up with the turbulence all of a sudden? I mean, no turbulence in any plane except for the one that had Big Boy, because the pilot was drunk apparently.
Yeah.
In the beginning of it, but there was that one scene when there was all kinds of turbulence. Was it supposed to be like,
I don't know what that was about?
Really tough right now, or is it, what was that all about? Did you guys see that too?
Yeah.
During a huge international emergency where the president is on Air Force One, you're supposed to not know where he goes, but you can guess. Right. He's going somewhere where there's really good weather and there's a city nearby so they can get good radio. Like, like it's weird that they're suddenly getting turbulence. Yeah, what are they doing?
That was weird.
Over Russia?
Pilot in the world can't figure this out?
Chick in the bucket. And do presidents go to Super Bowls? That was just a question I had.
No, I don't. Mm. I can't remember the last time.
That seems really targety to me.
It does. It seems
this
like.
This was pre 9/11, so I mean, barely. Story.
Well, yeah. But I don't think they did then, I'm saying. I don't think they ever go to Super Bowls. I don't think you have a large concentration of people, why would you go
to they go to the baseball games though, right?
Yeah, throw out pitches
the
and stuff.
First pitch. Yeah,
that's true.
Well, I can see Richard Nixon going to a Super Bowl, but presidents after that, until Clinton, no.
There hasn't been that many Super Bowls if you compare it to how many presidents there's been.
Well, so I can never tell because those damn Roman numerals go on so long. Who knows what that number is?
Obama may become first city president to attend a Super Bowl.
Next year, it'll just be called the Super Bowl.
Right.
They'll start over.
The amazing Super Bowl.
And then put real damn numbers on it.
Not the Super Bowl rises.
Yeah, exactly.
According to 2011 report, no president, living president, has ever went to... or sitting president, of course he's living, went to a Super Bowl.
Oh, all right. See? None ever in the history of this country. Told you.
Sitting president. So, like, Carter's been to 21 consecutive Super Bowls.
Oh,
and
yeah. He's a big Pats fan. Sits way up in the bleeders. Yeah, he knows. okay, I think that's it for all this stuff. I was going to say one other thing and I forgot. Oh no, we talked about that. I was going to say the Kieran Hines, the Irish actor who's so great, and Julius Caesar and guy on Game of Thrones and all that. He was also Alba Forth Dumbledore, Dumbledore's brother in the final films.
Oh yeah.
So guy's great. I like him. Bring him on. Yeah. Bring that weird ass face up as much as you want.
Big flat face.
Yeah, like a big fish, like a weird big fish. Like not just a normal fish, like one you can only capture like up in Norway on some salty coast. Just some big gnarly gray fish that has no name. Like, throw it back.
It's looking at me weird.
It looks like a fake Russian president throwing back. He sounded Italian in this movie. Anyway, let's move on to some sound clips. We got many of them, or a bunch of them, not too many, and they begin with Affleck being so young.
You guys see what I say?
He just sounds like he's five.
You guys see what I say?
Yeah
we do. We do, Ben. What is animal crackers?
Are these animal crackers? Are they sticking in Arwen's belly button right now? Is that what's happening?
According to the trivia on IMDb, Affleck is Tom Clancy's favorite Jack Ryan.
Mm.
Oh, interesting.
Mine too. Wow. I just want to say,
what?
Mine too.
What? Really?
Even better
I just wanted to say that.
I like Harrison Ford as
Whether
Jack
Whether it's
Ryan.
True or not, you just wanted to say
it. I just wanted to say
it. All right, fine.
Who is your favorite Jack Ryan? And you can't say Chris Pine.
I want to say Chris Pine.
Harrison Ford. I mean, come on.
I like Alec Baldwin. I thought really liked Hunt for Red October, and I think a lot of that was because Alec Baldwin was believable as, all right, I'm a historian who's just kind of falling into this. Harrison Ford looked like he'd been in politics and in the military forever.
He'd been through some stuff. Yeah. Right. He did look presidential. I'm just going to say, maybe we can't say it, but I would rather just say I think I can put some faith in Chris Pine being good.
Sure.
I like him in pretty much everything. And I thought Unstoppable was great. It's underrated Tony Scott movie about a runaway train that's tropey as all hell, but I think he's great in it.
And Denzel Washington, I love him.
He put on some like blue collar fat for it and everything. It just looked rough. He was great. Really good. That movie's good. You should watch that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as dumb as it sounds. It's
right.
Fun.
And I think I've seen so much, and just reading the description, I'm like, God, this is so tropey, and it's just. But yeah, I bet you're right. I bet it was fantastic.
It is literally tropes on trains or tropes on rails. They should call it, because right. It was tropey. Right. I'll get out. But it was a lot of fun. It was. It would end up being Tony Scott's last film before he hurled himself off that bridge. Yeah. Still a big loss to everyone involved. That sounds pretty serious, says this clip.
Just a little bit closer to that terrible moment when the beating of a butterfly's wings unleashes a hurricane. God himself cannot stop.
I am the wimpiest man ever to lead the revolution.
Why do you keep getting quieter? I can't hear you, man.
I'm going to blow up in the car later when I smoke.
Can be sooner or later. It looks like sooner.
I was never even sure he was the villain. Like the way they handled villains in this, it wasn't very clear. Like, I don't know who I was supposed to be rooting
not
against
Michael
the most.
Not like present danger. This is not as clear.
No, or like even in nice, like in Patriot Games, you knew Sean Bean was the guy to kill. Like you knew who you had to get. And this one, it was like, is it the German? Is it his buddy that went and strangled the other dude and in front of everybody? Is it the giant blonde looking Scandinavian guy? Like, who am I rooting for here? I was never sure. All right.
Ben Affleck.
Moving on to the word. Oh, here's the word crap in Arabic. If you ever wanted to know, because we saw the subtitles. If you wanted to know how to say crap, this is how you say it. I hope that's right, because that's awesome. Who knows? The movie could be lying to us. Beepers back in the day. This is okay. So kids, gather around, children. When we had beepers, they would make this sound on a table. Oh, it's like grandpa cut one off.
It was like texting, but you could only text a phone number.
It was the worst.
Right.
Think about what that was. How stupid. It would tell you, it would text you a phone number. It would cost you, by the way, way too much money to have one of these. Then it would tell you, what that would tell you is go find a phone and call that number back.
Right.
Oh, that's a dark time. Dark period in communications. Just bad. Morgan Freeman gets down to business.
We're about to breathe air that's way over your pay grade, so listen up. You're going to be asked for analysis and advice. I'll be goddamn sure you know what you're talking about before you give it. Don't be afraid to say you don't know. And choose your words carefully.
Yeah, I love nice the music words. There.
Right.
The music is wrong for that scene.
I thought the music overall was pretty good, though.
Yeah,
I thought it was Armageddon. Agree.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie.
Jerry Goldsmith, right? Another Goldsmith movie, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, because the other movie we're doing next week is Danny Elfman.
Right.
It's hard to get those two guys mixed up. Yeah.
Play Blin Affleck's music again.
Yeah,
that's what he's doing.
That was all right. Yeah. Here's a rookie mistake.
Despite what your source says, we hear that Nez Meraz is a hardliner. Is he a hardliner?
No. It's a bit too soon to make that assessment, sir.
Like, he leans over and goes, no.
No, the answer is no.
Everyone can hear me in here, but no. Right. In this what weird glass no? room nobody knows about.
Oh, Jason Mraz, what?
Here we go. Not ugly, what? Oh.
I don't think you're ugly.
I like that line.
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh. I'm going to play that a lot.
I don't think you're ugly.
Any chance I get.
That actually would make me feel really good to have Morgan Freeman say that.
Right.
Would
it?
Well, I'm trying to think of the story.
I want that as the ringtone.
The conversation that would lead up to it would be Brian going, oh, I'm just so ugly. I just feel so gross right now. I don't like how I look. It's this and that. And he would go,
I don't think you're ugly.
Oh, and you'd go, aww. Oh, thanks, Morgan.
Aw.
Tell me about
the last time I saw him, Ryan.
Last time I saw Randy Jordan.
All right. Awkward thanks is this clip.
Thank you.
There you go. It's awkward. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's a funny joke.
I'm a bomb technician. If you see me running, try to catch up.
Oh, that's good.
I wrote that. You know what I actually titled that? I called it Is Funny Joke, is what I wrote.
You get my humor, no?
Yeah. Is Funny Joke.
It's funny. It's funny.
Another little quickie. Why didn't it play?
Nemiroff can choke on it.
There's your voice, Randy. there's your man. There's your leave.
I want a shirt that says that.
Play that again.
Oh, you know what? That's the president with his cold. Never mind. Here, I'll play it again.
Nemiroff can choke on it.
Yeah, he had a cold.
God, so obvious, too. It's like, maybe we'll take a couple days, let James Cromwell get over his swine flu.
Yeah. That'll do, pig. That'll do.
Thank you for getting my reference.
That pig can choke on it. That'll do, pig. Nemirov. Here's some strangle sounds. I always like to capture these weird sounds in the movies. Here you go.
That's got to be a tough thing, right? Director tells you, all right, you're getting choked. Make choking noises.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
I often choke when I'm trying to take a dump, so let me make that face.
It must not be a tough thing to do. You just did it very well.
I guess so. All right.
I don't know. It sounded ridiculous to me.
Here is another short one.
I'm at Hogwarts. What was that?
Yeah, that was great.
Oculus Reparis.
Oculus Reparis. all right, some angry acting. There was plenty, but here's some stuff.
We don't know where he is. We just know he's not there. Can you call back in about an hour?
We don't have an hour. The fella's going to want to show how tough he is. He's going to hit back now.
Sir, I am just a phone answerer. I don't even know who you just named.
Yeah, exactly. Man, they could have used cell phones in this movie.
Yeah.
You're breaking up. Click.
Angry acting on the plane.
Yes. Maybe they're afraid of being attacked and they can't get this goddamn chair to open.
So glad you captured that.
Jesus.
It was great. It was the Alias man did that.
That's Ron Rifkin, yeah.
Ron Rifkin, yeah. That guy's cool.
He really is, and he's so funny looking, but he's... he kind of is. Like, you know, look at the picture of him. Dude, you know, he always wears those teeny tiny little circular glasses.
Yeah,
funny and thing. His ears kind of stick out, and his nose is kind of high on his, you know.
I would have bought him more. I would have bought him as the German Nazi guy more than angry American cabinet member, because he has that look of a little angry German.
He could, right. He could probably pull off the Russian accent. He has the Russian look or the European look that
for sure.
Could throw an accent on there.
He's got those crazy creases on his mouth lines. We call those? What are those called? One day those will bite him in the ass, but for now they'll look really cool. At some point.
Those will turn into jowls before too long. Right. They start going south. Yeah.
Those are going to pull downward. Let's move on to this penultimate clip, Out of Control Everywhere.
Cut him off.
The system is set up so you can't cut it off. That's the whole idea.
Then get somebody down there to stop him.
All right. Get him some head cold medicine, and also Bruce McGill, everybody. Hanging out back there, doing his thing. Right. Bruce McGill. I think I prefer McGill with his beard.
Like, the president's all, cut him off. Sir, he's actually trying to save the world. He's trying to stop the war. The president's like, I want to kill people. Yeah. Come on.
I want to destroy everyone. all right. And then this is really important. This is the most important clip of the film. I think this is the one that will last with people. This is the one that will really turn their heads and make them remember this movie for forever. Here it is.
Andy Dufresne flew crawl through a river of shit and came out clean on the other side.
There you go. Remember that part? Remember that scene?
Oh, yeah. I remember that was great. That was the most touching scene. That's who lied dying, right?
It's the narration you're seeing as Ben Affleck is pulling himself out of the Baltimore rubble, pulling players of the Rockets and the Gators off of him.
Yep. Banging that pipe three times with the rock, waiting for the lightning to strike. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
What a great movie that is. All right, let's get to these. It's time for awards, everybody. It's where we give the movie some awards, and this movie has three. The German Stereotype Award. Good job. Way to go. You guys ran away with it. Number two, we should feel more bad about the football stadium blowing up award than we did. Man. I think that would have been pretty horrible, and I don't think I felt as bad as I should have. It's hard to do in movies. I get that.
It is.
It's hard to evoke that kind of...
But you have to admit, like, it was the Super Bowl, so you're like, oh, that's no big deal. No big loss. Yeah. Like, if they'd blown up, I don't know, a school?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that would have been worse, I suppose.
I don't know.
Then finally, the We All Wish Bruce McGill Had a Beard in This Award. Easy winner there. Trek stuff, a bunch of connections, more than you might think. Some are obvious. But Stratton Leopold, executive producer, was unit production manager on 2009's Star Trek. Russell Bobbitt, not Bibbit or Ibbit, and not the guy that had his wiener bit off. Russell Bobbitt.
John Wayne Bobbitt.
Yeah, remember that guy? Now that happens every other day, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think she bit it off, did she?
She just cut it off.
She threw it out the door or out the window or something.
Yeah, out the car window.
But now, I'm just looking for stories for the morning show, constantly seeing stories about women cutting off men's wieners.
It's become the in vogue thing to do.
I guess so. Anyway, Israeli pilot, property master for 2009 Star Trek, part-time actor, confirmed it's the same guy. Ken Jenkins, Admiral Pollock. On TNG, played Dr. Paul Stubbs in the Enterprise, TNG episode Evolution. Also, Dr. Bob Kelso on Scrubs, so we know him.
I remember that.
He was such a jerk in TNG. I hated him in that. Mm-hmm. Jerry Goldsmith, original music, wrote the musical score for 5 Star Trek movies and the main theme for TNG and Voyager. James Cromwell, President Fowler, First Contact, Zefram Cochran on Enterprise, played Zefram Cochran in the episode Broken Bow, made guest appearances on TNG and DS9. And then finally, Bruce McGill. National Security Advisor Revel. He was on Voyager, played Braxton in the episode Relativity. There is some serious Star Trek business going on.
Thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, way to go, man.
Get this week.
Way to dig that out. Soundtrack great. I would give it a PG for pretty great. I think Jerry Goldsmith was still rocking it, still making good scores. Yeah. Nice job. Still the most featured score maker, I think, on this show.
Elevated the film for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so easy though when you're writing the score for a movie that's like military and stuff like that. It's just a lot of drums, a lot of fifes, a lot of trumpets.
Fifes.
Fifes. Wasn't it the same year?
Plural of fife.
Was this the same year or was it 90s that Crimson Tide was a movie? I don't remember when that came out, but Crimson Tide turned the tide on film scores, I thought. And it started to all sound like
95.
Was it 95? Hmm? Oh, it felt later than that.
Wow, is it wet?
Is it wet? Yeah, it's wet. Wow. It's a submarine. It was a submarine, so it got wet a lot.
What?
Is it wet? Didn't Brian say, is it wet? Or do you say,
that's
is it
what
wet?
That's what he said, yeah.
He said, is it wet?
I'm so confused right now.
I am too, so I'll just move on. Let's sum it up. 140 characters or less. You guys make your little Twitter post about the film. We do it every week. Let's start with Randy.
The sum of all fears. The sum of all fears.
Is it
it's an exhibit Pimp My Ride meme. We put a bomb in your movie so you can watch a bomb while you watch a bomb.
Perfect.
Ooh.
Is it wet? All right. Brian Dunaway.
Right. All right. This movie is a lot like the book in the fact that I had to read most of it. All right. Also, Scott, according to Excel, the sum of all fears is not a number.
Oh, great. Aww. That's too bad. So what'd you put in a big row like falling, high places, spiders?
Equals sum bracket of all fears.
Perfect.
Close.
All right. Nicely done. Then finally, Mr. Ribbit.
Sum of all fears, a typical Tom Clancy politics meets action flick all tied together with Google Maps interstitials.
Perfect.
Exactly. I thought that. It was so much. It was strength. Like, oh, come on.
Every time. It's like, oh, wait, put the name on that one because now I don't know what I'm looking at.
Google Maps before Google Maps.
Baltimore or Russia. I'm so confused.
Very confused.
I'm losing these accents. Give me a map.
Well, here is what I learned while.
Street View?
Yeah, Street View. While the inventor of warp drive and farmer that owned Babe the Pig wandered around the movie the entire time with either a head cold or a bloody bandage. Don't let huge blonde Nazis help you put your scarf on.
Yes.
I forgot what I meant by that for just
a
second.
Help him out.
Yeah,
yes.
Help him out and then strangle him. And finally, all you have to do is mobilize the Russian Air Force, or all you have to do to mobilize the Russian Air Force is to tell them a fake story about a bomb in Moscow. And that's what I learned. That was just too easy. He'd come out going, yes, it's a problem. They bombed Moscow. All right, get on the only planes we have and let's go destroy America. That's it? That's it?
I hate those guys.
You don't need verification of any kind? That scared me. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
All right, emails. I got one here from Chris Thompson. Wrote and said, hey, Film Sackers, thought I might suggest a movie that is recent and terrible for you guys to sack. It is called Legion. It's streaming around Halloween. It might be good for then, but other than that, there are a lot of aspects I think would make it a good episode. I leave you with an IMDb link, which you gave me. This is 2010's Legion. Chris Thompson, thanks. It was, what's his name? He was in the Russell Crowe Around the World movie.
Marco Polo?
No, shite. Can't think of anything.
Paul Bettany?
No, yes. He's the voice of Jarvis on the Iron Man movies.
Oh, really?
It's that guy. He plays the
Paul
priest.
Bettany does the voice? I thought it was Jude Law.
No, Jude Law.
I guess we've
not.
Said this before.
We have
we?
Had this conversation. It's yes. Paul Bettany. Is absolutely
all right.
Jarvis.
I believe you. Fine. I concede.
I think it would have worked the other way. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's Paul Bettany doing his best Jude Law impersonation.
There you go. Got one here from Paul. Paul says, hey, Sackers, I just finished re-listening to the one about the Quest, and I have had a thought when Randy was talking about 1 cubic meter of pure gold. We all know gold is heavy, but I decided to do a little bit of math. Gold weighs a little more than 19 grams per cubic centimeter. Multiply that out, and 1 cubic centimeter ends up weighing more than 42,000 pounds, or 21 tons. I'm pretty sure that would be a bit beyond the lifting capacity of James Bond's blimp. Love the show, guys. Paul. So confirmation.
Yep. Thank you for your math.
Yeah, that's great, man. Smart listeners awesome. Is what we have. We have smart, smart listeners. Next week, we are taking on The Frighteners, the last Peter Jackson film before Lord of the Rings changed his life forever. And we'll hit that straight on. Michael J. Fox in one of his last major Hollywood roles. Lots of lasts happening, I think, in that movie. Right.
That was his last motion picture role, wasn't it?
I am surprised because I thought The Frighteners was a Stephen King collection. So we'll see.
Really?
See how that goes.
You're thinking of the...
I'm thinking of all the other Stephen King collections.
Stephen King movies, yeah. That does sound like Tommyknockers or something. One of his weird things. Right,
there was something exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But
maybe Tommyknockers actually is what you might be thinking of.
But Frighteners is something I'd never seen. I don't know how I missed it. And I've seen it, and we'll talk about it next week. But holy crap, am I excited to talk about that movie. I can't wait. Filmsack.com is the website everybody should go to support us and hang out with us and find our links and go to our forums and participate in the Frog Pants community and the Filmsack one in particular. That's filmsack.com. You can also email us, filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're at filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yoo-hoo.
We'll see you next time.
There is no joy here in Russia.
No.
Information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I thought you were going to say, is it wet?